Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
And what's it gonna do?
It doesn't matter how you're doing. Woo! Wheel of dealing, limousine wreck, jet flag.
Can you dig it, nigga sucker?
Would you please shut the hell up?
You don't know what hard times are, daddy.
The cream will rise to the top, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Look at my demon rumble.
What up, what up? Welcome to another exciting episode of Keep the Kayfabe. I am not Mike Bate, as you can clearly tell, but this is your old friends, the Taking It Old School crew, Gary Williams and myself. We are going to do just that this week. It's very exciting. Gary, how are you?
I'm doing great, and I'm sorry to say that Val Venus has left the building as well, so... Unfortunately, our fans are not going to get to hear from Val tonight. He's on location doing another professional physical movie.
Yes, if you understand what that means. He was probably in Milwaukee, too, for a certain convention. But,
Must you go there? Must you
I
go
must.
There?
Will yes. you, in the words of Gorilla, will you stop?
Will you stop? I believe that's Tito.
Yes. Wow. Spoiler alert, Tito's name will be coming up in this episode.
It will be.
But yeah, we thought we'd, as we do from time to time, we're going to do a little bit of old school. And what precipitated this was recently on AEW, there was an hour-long match between MJF and Will Ospreay, which by all accounts was outstanding. It was This isn't our place in this episode to go into depth about it, but it was legit. It was just, yeah. I mean, two guys, what great story, the right balance, a fast, slow pace, but you know, like just, it was really good. But of course, invariably, because, and this is not a knock on anybody, but I think certainly generational people might have different opinions on things, but people proclaiming it the greatest of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Gary and I certainly have seen some hour long matches in our day involving,
yeah,
the likes of the Ric Flairs and the Stings and the Ricky Steamboats and you name it. But that got us thinking about this whole greatest of all time, or GOAT, if you will. And Gary put together a really interesting format here for us to kind of look at GOATs throughout the sort of pre-WrestleMania era, right? And you know, why don't you explain it real quick?
Yeah, so what I did was I did a little research, and I think your point is well taken. You know, like, I want to make sure that people know, like, this episode is not about, at least tonight's episode is not about identifying who we think is going to be the greatest of all time, because I think it's almost impossible not to get emotional about it to some degree. But what I did think was necessary was just thinking about, yeah, you're right. Like that hour long match that we saw with MJF and with Will Ospreay was really cool, but that used to happen every night, like literally every single night that Ric Flair, Harley Race, Bruno Sammartino at times, not so much, but those kinds of guys, they wrestled 60-minute matches every night across the country constantly. And so, and then there's this other argument that's kind of been going around now that John Cena has announced his retirement. You know, will he surpass Ric Flair's 16-time world championship? And if he does, is he the greatest of all time? Blah, blah, blah. And again, like, I really believe in a lot of ways, some of these conversations, while they're very fun, they are kind of apples and oranges to some degree, because I do think there's something to be said about the pre-WrestleMania times and then the post-WrestleMania times. Now, some of the wrestlers on our GOAT match card for tonight have had post-WrestleMania, and so on a different episode of this, they may creep back up again. But what I thought we'd do tonight is take a look at just some pre or as WrestleMania kind of icons of wrestling. And I've created a match card in which Steve and I are going to just kind of banter a little bit about who has the greater claim to GOAT status of the three that we've put together. And just trying to figure out, you know, who might be the GOAT of the match and select maybe a winner from the match. And we'll see how many we agree with and how many we disagree with. And I hope that those of you listening will get a kick out of it, and maybe you'll comment back and tell us that we're crazy and that we did, yeah. You know, we should have picked some other ones. But yeah, I have a great match card lined up, and so let's hit the bell, ding ding.
Yeah, so, you know what? Maybe some of you have heard of some of these guys, but maybe like one of the ones we mention, you haven't heard of the other guy, and that'll get you, you know, after we're talking about it, like watch it on YouTube, like learn a little bit about somebody, yeah. Maybe that you knew in name only. But yeah, their bell has been rung.
Yes.
And we're ready to get going here.
Okay. So, and the match card is being adjusted even as I'm speaking, just so you know. So, all right. First match. This is a GOAT triple threat. This is between Milwaukee's very own The Crusher, Gorgeous George, and George the Animal Steel. What are your initial reactions to that one, Steve?
Yeah, so I mean, I can go. We are going to talk about these, but of course, if I go with my kind of gut reaction, it's like, you know, I'm from Milwaukee. Gary is too, but I still live here. One would think, oh, he's going to go Crusher all the way, but I feel like two of these three, and well, actually, all three were really a gimmick, a really larger than life gimmick. I feel like Gorgeous George, who I admittedly have the least experience with out of the three, feels to me like the bigger deal. Like, I feel like the Crusher was more of a regional. He did get on WWF and AWA, you know, throughout the country. But I feel like he was more of a niche kind of thing. Mm-hmm. George the Animal, I mean, maybe in his, like, younger days, he did things that I'm just not even thinking of. But I think by the time I really focused on him, it was more of a silly act.
Yeah.
And I feel like Gorgeous George is just one of those names you'll never, like, he's just kind of stamped in there. He feels like, to me, the bigger deal out of the three.
And I think we're gonna be in agreement on this one. Gorgeous George, he transcended the original heel. Like, he was really one of the very first heels that came across as arrogant. So, like, superstar Billy Graham, Ric Flair after him. I mean, that those guys mimicked, even Muhammad Ali pointed to Gorgeous George at one time. But I don't want to dismiss, though, that the Crusher was iconic. I mean, he's got a statue in our hometown of South Milwaukee. And the other thing is, George the Animal Steel is also very iconic. He was a teacher in the public schools, I believe, in Detroit area. He has a field named after him. He was a longtime educator. In fact, George the Animal was a novelty act, because he basically would teach during the year and then he would go and tour on summer. And yes, when we saw him, he was more of a comedy act. But the thing about George was, prior to that, in the 70s especially, he was just a dastardly heel. He was really, and he also is one of the originators of the foreign object. You know, like, he would bring one of those tongue depressors taped up, and you know, so I think this was a great battle. It's a good battle. But I do think I agree with you that of the three, I think Gorgeous George has the greater GOAT status claim of them. So, all right, first match happened. That's good. All right, this one gets a little bit more complicated now.
You aren't kidding.
Yeah, this one's Harley Race and Bruno Sammartino.
You know, the deal with this one is, honest to God, like, there's no, people are going to have strong opinions, but you can't say definitively, oh, this is a no-brainer. I mean, it really is your exposure. Like, Bruno Sammartino in the WWF, WWF era, I mean, ridiculously long title reign, like, larger than life. I mean, and then he was at a, he went into his, what, 50s? Maybe 60s wrestling still.
Yeah.
Then an announcer. His reputation speaks for itself in the WWF.
Longest reigning champion still to this day.
Yeah. But Harley Race, man. I mean, that guy, he was just, I mean, innovative, because I remember he went off the top or off the second, whatever, second or top. But like, at the time, they acted like that was going to ruin the business because he was too much of a quote unquote high flyer.
Yeah.
But man, he could go. And like, I mean, obviously, he he gave us Ric Flair because he put him over. And he, again, he also went late into his career, a little bit more ham, you know, cornier when he was later, like with the King gimmick and all that, but still a testament to how great and how like just timeless he was. And I mean, trained guys, I don't know. I'm rambling now, but if you're going to make me pick somebody, which we have to do on this show, I'm going to go Harley Race.
Nice, nice. You know, that this, you're right, Steve, when you said this is not, the naked eye is not obvious, because for me, I think what tips over the edge for me with Bruno Sammartino is the fact that to this day, his record still stands. And, true. And that is not something that Harley Race can do. So I am going to go with Bruno. And again, but I also appreciate what Harley Race did. I mean, so Harley Race, as I think we might have covered this in one of our 80s episodes that we did, but he was doing hour-long Broadways and matches across the country. He was a traveling champion versus Bruno Sammartino, who is only regional. I mean, he right. was the champion in, you know, New York, which was at its time, you know, very nationalistic. I mean, it had Pedro Morales, who was Puerto Rican. It had people like Bruno Sammartino, who was appealing to the Italians, you know, like, and so like, but for me, like, the fact that Bruno's record still is intact today gives Bruno the edge. So for me, he's got that's better goat stats.
Fair. Nobody can argue that.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Let's the card turns old school right now as we see a goat triple threat between Vern Gagne, Fritz Von Erich, and Stu Hart.
Patriarchs.
So for our fans who maybe aren't 100%, let's just do a background. You know, Vern Gagne was champion and promoter of the AWA. Fritz Von Erich, those of you may have seen the recent movie called The Iron Claw, that, you know, he was in World Class Championship Wrestling down in Texas. And Stu Hart was Calgary Stampede Wrestling up in Canada, and the father of the Hart family of Bret Hart, Ilk, and many others. What say you, my friend?
Boy, this is really tough. I mean, like, Vern, I get the nostalgia too, because AWA is kind of what I grew up on.
Yeah.
On Sunday mornings. Fritz, you know, I learned about a little later in my wrestling fandom because I didn't watch that as a kid. But my God, I mean, how can you not know about it now? They make movies about that family. And then Stu Hart, I mean, the Hart Dojo and his own family and other people he trained.
But the same could be said about Vern Gagne. No,
yes,
because he had,
there'd be no Hulk Hogan if there'd no be Hulk no Hogan, Vern Gagne.
No
Bobby Rick, Heenan,
no Ric Flair, no Iron Sheik. He trained Ricky Steamboat, Ken Patera. I mean, the list goes on and on with Vern Gagne as well. So,
you know, I'm gonna pick Stu Hart, just because I can just keep coming up. I mean, Bret Hart, one of the all-time greats.
Yeah.
Owen Hart. I mean, we just had the Owen Hart tournament. I mean,
Jim Neidhart,
Chris Jericho. I mean, Roddy Piper all went through the dojo. I mean, you could just, and there's like, we could spend like half a show. We could spend a whole show talking about every wrestler that went through that dojo. And I just think, certainly, if you look at, even at an international standpoint, just with Canada and the relationship with the United States and wrestling, I don't know. There's no wrong answer in here, but I'm gonna go Stu Hart.
Interesting. So, for me, you know what's interesting, Steve? You make a very compelling case. Here's the thing for me, though. I think at the end of the day, Fritz Von Erich was very regional, and while if anyone does any research on World Class Championship Wrestling, I mean, they were printing money in the 80s and they did things that nobody else was doing. But the thing but it was very regional. And I don't necessarily feel like at the end of the day, like, I think there's a lot more, you know, dark clouds around there than anything else. So now if it's between Vern Gagne and Stu Hart, here's the thing. For me, I agree. But both guys have a legacy of training people. You cannot deny that.
Right.
What I think tips one over the edge, believe it or not, is just it's his ability to transition his league into the modern era, get on ESPN, become national, for whatever it's worth. And I'm going to go with Vern Gagne. And I think that what tips over the edge between Vern Gagne and Stu Hart is the fact that Vern was able to continue to modernize his league to the point. Now, granted, both of them lost the territorial battles to Vince McMahon.
So did everybody.
But everybody did. I just think if on a more global level, I think Vern Gagne's ability to get on ESPN for his ability. And I also think to some degree, his being an Olympic gold medalist also, you got to kind of take that into factor in terms of, you know, as you look at the three different guys and their wrestling abilities. And Vern Gagne, even till the very, very end, was still competing for his own championships. And whereas Stu Hart was pretty much behind the scenes. So my greatest GOAT claim of those three would be Vern Gagne.
We are split on two of the three. Split. which is kind of cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take this next one because I think it's time for the women's match. I think it's definitely time to bring the women out. This one is Sherry Martel, Scary Sherry, but at the time just Sherry Martel, and then the Fabulous Moolah.
Ooh, so. It is very, very, very hard for me to assess this without the whole story because
agreed.
When I grew up, there was nobody but Fabulous Moolah kind of representing women wrestling. And from what I was, you know, my exposure, this champion forever. But yet, cynically, it was like a good chunk of that. There was nobody really credible to take it from her.
No.
And then, I mean, it's impossible to untether. And here, let me qualify this. She has a really tarnished legacy, but I also think that also influences this because if you believe all you hear about her, she kind of did hold back others to keep her spot.
But you gotta give it to her. I mean,
she controlled
all of women's wrestling for how long?
I might be like providing a different answer from you again, but I just can't not pick Sherry Martel for a number of reasons. One, she was a kind of in that transition era where women wrestlers were kind of becoming a little bit more starlet types.
Yeah.
Starlet, not Scarlet. she was badass and legit. And everybody that talks about her talks about how just badass she was, like in and out of the ring, behind and in front of the camera. And she not only was a good wrestler, AWA, I believe, and WWF, but she transitioned into a long, effective career. I mean, she was the one that kicked off the Shawn Michaels heel turn that went on to one of the greatest wrestlers of our time. And she was a fundamental part of that. Harlem Heat, like she's a great manager, too. I don't know. I just feel like she was a trendsetter in her own right, at least to me in a slightly more interesting way, because Moolah probably did stuff when she was younger that I'm just marginalizing.
True.
But the Moolah I really remember, it was like, was on top because there was nobody else. And part of that was her own stomping on others.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm probably very biased on this one. But Sherry Martel to me is just kind of a cool story.
Yeah. You know, I don't think it's wrong to be, well, obviously, as we've talked about, whenever you're thinking about GOAT, right?
Yeah.
It is. It's in the eye of the beholder. I mean, if, you know, clearly we're doing this show, and the reason partly that we're doing the old school is because I think, you know, for Mike and Matt, you know, there a lot of these characters, you know, they don't even know, or they weren't even born yet, for some of them. But, you know, but in the same token, you know, when you think about the whole package, so you think about their career, their gimmick, their in-ring ability, their promo skills, their ability to either draw a crowd or draw heat from a crowd, I think it's almost impossible for Sherry Martel not to be the greater goat in this situation, because I think Moolah was a crap talker kind of in her later years. But I mean, like, I think Sherry Martel was a multi worlds champion. She was in the AWA and she got, I believe she got the WWF title as well.
Yes, I believe so.
And so Moolah, you know, yes, she was on top the whole time, but you know, for me, like, I think Sherry Martel really left a mark in terms of developing an actual character, something beyond just a wrestler. But the thing about her, and the thing that I think also trumps her over Moolah, she took a lot of bumps, both as a wrestler. I mean, if you watch some of her old matches, she wasn't afraid to fly around. Moolah was more of the plodding and stomping kind of thing. So I just, you know, I'm with you. I give Sherry Martel, we both probably could be definitely outvoted by the nation here by saying, you know, by our listeners because of Moolah's run. But in the same token, I really believe Sherry Martel has greater goat status.
For sure.
All right. Okay. So this one is, I think, this one's a little fascinating because it's, but the match card is subject to change and it just got changed.
Oh, dear.
Just so you know. So you're going to have to pivot on this one. So we're going to go, this is a goat death match, and it's between Terry Funk, Roddy Piper, and Mick Foley.
Holy Lord.
This is a triple threat to the death match.
Oh my gosh. Terry Funk, Mick Foley,
and Roddy Piper.
Well, in some ways, I'm not going to, the listeners don't get to know what your original match card had, maybe.
Correct.
But I'm going to say, in some ways, this makes it almost a little easier for me. But yet,
then the
again,
other one?
Yes, because honestly, again, you could make argument. And like I could argue with myself for an hour on this one because Terry Funk, my God, I mean, all-timer, just passed away, wrestled into his 70s and yet was relevant every era he was in. Some of the craziest stuff. I mean, he went hardcore when hardcore was on the rise. He and his brother dominated the scene. Double Cross Ranch, like his I Quit match with Ric Flair, one of my all-time favorites. His feud with Jerry Lawler, so on. Mick Foley, most of you that are a little bit younger, he doesn't need an introduction. I mean, he went from like kind of garbagey wrestler to like an all-timer, most beloved WWE world champion, so on. But I have to go Roddy Piper because he just is just that he has, at least in the mainstream, slightly more icon status to me because one, he was just that centerpiece villain of the '80s. Hogan needed that, or I don't think Hogan would have been this successful in the onset. And then he went on to be a beloved, I think, because he's just so damn good at what he did. He went on to be a great baby face too, but he always had that quirky edge. Probably, I mean, out of the three of that, oh man, I'm going to argue. I was going to say probably the best promo out of the three, but Terry Funk was pretty damn good too.
Pretty damn good.
Piper, and then he went on to Hollywood. I mean, he had a couple legit movies. Like, I mean, So did Terry Funk, but I mean, yeah. Oh, God. But I don't know, I'm going to stick with it. I think Roddy Piper stuck just a little bit against the edge on just being the guy that more people... He's more of a household name in the world than the other two.
Okay, that's fair. Whew. So, yeah, this one's not an easy one.
No.
And so I'll go by process of elimination. I think Mick Foley gets pinned first because honestly he's known for, you know, the Hell in the Cell and some other things. And yes, he'll always be a great, you know, character in wrestling. But of the two of them, you know, I don't know. And so now you've got Piper and Funk that are battling it out. And here's the only thing that I could think was different between the two of them. Now, granted, Roddy Piper passed away, you know, a little earlier in his life than Terry Funk necessarily did. But the last parts of Roddy Piper's career were not flattering.
That's true. Yeah, he hung on too long. Yeah, that run where him and Flair got the tag team titles when they were old in WWE.
And it he was not.
Pure nostalgia. Yeah.
Yes. And I'm not telling you, I'm not saying that Terry Funk was, you know, a body Adonis, but I will say that dude could go and he kept going and his ticker. And you think about, he was an NWA world champion at one point. The thing that Roddy Piper has going for him is, I think to this day, there will be very few true heels that will. MJF has got an opportunity, Ric Flair, obviously, but Roddy Piper's ability when during that rock and roll era and that first iteration with Hogan and right at WrestleMania one, like literally right at the edge of the WrestleMania era, of which we're trying to talk a little bit more pre.
Yeah.
But I think he will go down as one of the greatest heels. But then again, I don't think Terry Funk is not only, he's a little bit more regional and maybe not as well known, but that guy could go. Like if you look at some of his matches, even some of his matches on like Saturday night's main event where it got more mainstreamed with him and Dory and JYD and Hogan. I mean, like, but the fact that he kept going and going and created some different characters like Chainsaw Charlie, did all kinds of things. To me, Terry Funk gets the pin over Roddy Piper.
I think that's reasonable. You're an egg sucking dog.
All right. Well, I took someone out of the original match card, but I think this got a little bit more difficult. But I am also card subject to change. And so we're going with Jerry the King Lawler and Nick Bockwinkle.
Wow. You sure know how to pick them.
So for those of our fans, right?
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Tell them a little bit about Nick Bockwinkle.
So Nick Bockwinkle was just, I mean, again, not the first arrogant heel, but like to me, one of the, at least in my lifetime, one of the guys that really stands out, because it wasn't just stupid talking. He was very intellectual and he had Bobby Heenan with him and he was just a great heel, like looked down on the fans, looked down on his opponent. And really, you know, in a company that was so dependent on Vern Gagne at the top, he kind of got the keys to the kingdom after that, which is a tremendous testament to at least Vern's confidence in him. And he's a great heel. Funny enough, after he wrestled, he did some stints like in NWA, WCW as the commissioner. Not nearly as interesting as he was as a wrestler, but not a knock on him either. But Jerry Lawler, I mean, my God, I mean, it's almost impossible not to pick him on this one, because just his imprint on wrestling, one, that region and how long the longevity it had, and some of these innovative storytelling techniques that have that kind of bridged the gap into modern wrestling storytelling. Really, he was doing stuff like that before it was kind of cool, and just a great wrestler. Again, went late into his career, and like Terry Funk, never really embarrassed himself, I think, because he knew his limitations, but he wrestled into his 60s. Hell, he wrestled, I think, after he had his heart attack that almost died. Never looked bad. And then, love him or hate him in the style he did it, one of the all-time announcers as well. That's a full body of career right there. And I just think he to me, out of all the ones we've done so far, to me, that's a little more clear cut that Jerry Lawler's the bigger deal.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, at the end of the day, the things that you said about Nick Bockwinkle cannot be discredited, though. I mean, his heel work and his the kind of like, for maybe for our listeners that are used to, you know, more used to like the genius Lanny Poffo and the way he would kind of project himself,
yeah,
or Steven Regal would project himself as this, you know, this better than that, or even Triple H when Triple H first started.
Yeah, that the Connecticut Blue Blood.
Yeah, that was Nick Bockwick. And he's like, I'm from Los Angeles and I'm smarter than all of you and I'm wiser than all of you. And just he and Bobby Heenan together were just magic. Like they were just amazing. Their ability to just get under your skin and sneak out that victory, you know, when the babyface clearly should have won. And, you know, and, but Jerry Lawler over Nick Bockwinkel, mainly because he literally carried a whole territory with sellout after sellout after sellout, mm-hmm. all in the 80s. I mean, the guy printed money down there, but I mean, like in the same token, like I think, you know, his character, his ability behind the scenes, his storytelling, his ability to influence a whole generation of people. And, you know, I agree. The greater goat of these two is definitely Jerry Lawler.
Yes, agreement.
Okay. all right, here we go. This one's really tough, I think. Ricky Steamboat and the Great Muta.
See, what's tough about this is that
up to this point, I've tried to keep all the heels together or all the
whatever. Yes.
This one I purposefully kind of split up.
Yeah, because
but yeah.
It's really compelling to me because here, Ricky Steamboat, I mean, anybody stateside that remembers, I mean, he had one of the greatest WrestleMania matches of all time with Macho Man Randy Savage. He had some of the greatest wrestling matches of all time with Ric Flair. Ric Flair, who is too many. The GOAT of wrestling cites him as by far his best opponent. And they wrestled mm-hmm. so many times that, I mean, and he was always a good guy and never, I mean, and then he made little stints when he was 60s and older and still looked great.
Even recently.
But where Muta is compelling is because I don't even think as much as researched as we are, probably realize the impact he had in Japan.
Correct.
But B, like, honest to God, I didn't watch Japanese wrestling when I was younger, but when he came over to WCW,
he was
just mesmerizing. And his matches with Sting. And I remember him wrestling Flair, and one of them, to me, the most iconic visuals was Flair had part of his face red from blood, the other part green from the mist.
Yes.
And he was in that future shock where they all wrestled each other. Like, and then he came back periodically and still had that mesmerizing aura about him. And then I think the other thing that probably gives him like lots of points is like, one, he went late into his career very effectively. I think he retired like a year or two ago. He also, I think, either ran a wrestling organization, but I think might have even founded it, Wrestler One or Wrestling mm-hmm. One in Japan. So, I mean, that gives back to the... So it's like, my God, this one's really hard. I think I'd have to go Ricky Steamboat just from the machine, like the wrestling all-time match machine that he was. And the fact that Flair, one of the all-time greatest, cited him as his best opponent. But man, really compelling conversation.
Yeah, this would definitely be an argument. I think the argument is really you know, the Orient and the East and the West, right?
Yes.
This is a classic East West, you know, the old Adrian Adonis and Jesse Ventura East West connection. But this truly is, and I think, you know, as I look at the two of them, the thing that is hard, I think, so for me, I don't know for a fact, but the Great Muta wasn't original of a shtick and a gimmick, because there was the Great Kabuki before him
mm-hmm.
who did the Green Mist and did all of that stuff.
True.
And so for me, like I'm not, but Ricky Steamboat was an original character and never wavered. I mean, his whole career, he was the same. to put on a career like he had and not change his gimmick at all is pretty remarkable. Not only never going heel, but always just being a white meat babyface, and his ability to be tag champion, his ability to be an NWA champion and Intercontinental champion. I mean, I just, you know, I think at the end of the day, if you want, you know, you look at career, gimmick, promo, crowds, you know, the Great Muta really didn't speak. And so was hard to get, but that was in itself was, you know, kind of a mystique.
Yeah, but for sure.
When I think about the in-ring stuff, I think it's hard to knock where that Ricky Steamboat's got a bit of an edge. Now, while the Great Muta had, he did that, what, that springboard,
yep, you know,
never somersault saw that thing. Holy crap. When he pulled that out for the first time, I was like, holy cow, like, yeah, unbelievable. But I think from a wrestling standpoint, I think that's really where Ricky Steamboat gets the edge for me as well.
I think so. Good one, though.
That was a really good one. Well, my friend, I think the managers are going to come out now.
Okay.
And we're
ready
gonna,
for this.
Yeah. We've had a change to the card. Change to the card is a triple threat manager match. Bobby the Brain Heenan, Jimmy Hart, and Jim Cornette.
Oh my gosh, you really did mix this up.
I did.
You know what? To me, this is a great conversation, but out of everything, certainly up to this point, and maybe everything left that you got, to me, this is a no contest. Bobby the Brain Heenan has to win this. And if you would have thrown Paul Heyman in there, I still would have.
So
it
the original,
been a fatal
the original,
four-way.
Yeah, the original match card had Paul Heyman in there. We've even got down the card, we even have a Mr. Fuji and Freddie Blassie could have gotten thrown. We could have had a manager battle royal.
And I think, no answer changes.
No.
Bobby the Brain Heenan was so good in every single way you can be in wrestling. He was a great wrestler. People don't realize that didn't see that part of it. One of the absolute greatest managers of all time, if not the greatest, and one of the absolute greatest of all time announcers. Mm-hmm. I mean, all three things he did equally well. And I've heard the argument said that if he hadn't done any, like Bobby Heenan would go down as an all-time great if he'd stuck to wrestling. He would be an all-time great if he stuck to management. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the testament. It's like he could have, I mean, just a naturally gifted, hilarious dude, like great manager, like in some case, wrestlers that needed that aura that he brought. Yeah. You know, some of these guys, like I loved Hercules, but you know, Hercules on his own, not as interesting. And so on and so on. I mean, the guy to help pull off Andre turning heel.
Yes.
And he made that. I mean, Andre needed the help too from a personality standpoint at that point in his career. Yeah, Bobby the Brain, to me, all-time great. One of the all-time greats in wrestling, period.
Agreed. Like, and if Bobby Heenan got matched up against some of these other guys, I think it would be a contest. Like, because it's hard to dispute where he falls. And I think this is exactly why when people today are like, oh, this guy's the greatest of all time, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, but if you ever watch Bobby Heenan, there was not a time that man was on screen or in an interview or in a promo or you name it, there was not a time that I can think of where I was like, boy, that sucked.
Right. That no never. There was no.
That man was on all the time.
And I still remember, like to this day, some people didn't like when Hogan turned heel. They thought Bobby ruined it a tiny bit because he kept yelling, but whose side is he on? You weren't supposed to be thinking that. But to me, that was Heenan playing his character, because why would he ever trust Hogan? He hated him.
He hated him.
He built stables to fight Hogan. That was the perfect line for Bobby Heenan to say. And I stand by it. Yeah.
He was, you know, I don't know where Hulk Hogan would be without Bobby Heenan. I mean, Bobby Heenan,
it's like
was
the argument
the perfect,
for Piper.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, he's the perfect antagonist. He was the weasel. I mean,
yeah,
that guy, if you watch old AWA stuff, and I'm telling you, there's some classic stuff with him and Nick Bockwinkel and just whatever, but they literally had a match where if Bobby Heenan lost, he would get put in a weasel suit.
Yeah, lots
of those. Oh my God. Like, you guys, the place, the roof was coming off the Civic Center in Minneapolis. Like, I mean, this dude just, I mean, it's hard to deny. I mean, I tried everything I could, Steve. I thought about, Skander Akbar. No, yeah. he was not going to do any good. Or Gary Hart. Now, or J.J. Dillon. I think J.J. Dillon maybe gave him a little bit of run. Now, here's the only part of Bobby Heenan's career. If you look, from what I remember, and I could be wrong, but other than Nick Bockwinkel, I don't think anyone won anything.
But it doesn't seem to matter.
But it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter. Like, Jimmy Hart had a ton of tag team champions and all.
Was he still managing Andre the Giant when beat Hulk Hogan?
I mean,
and was champion for like minutes.
Yeah, technically, maybe that might have been his only claim to fame. Well, no, he was partnered with Ric Flair, so I get to give him that.
That's true. Yeah, when Flair won the title.
Yeah. Okay. So that's very true. I my words go back, but
But most of it was not.
No. I mean, now for those listening, if this was a manager battle royal, Freddie Blassie and Mr. Fuji were also compelling characters and also were tremendous heels and tremendous wrestling heels as well. So they were born out of a completely different cloth than, say, Jimmy Hart and Jim Cornette. And, you know, the sad part about this is we've talked about all these guys, and Jim Cornette is probably also one of the greatest mouthpieces. There's very few times I can also say where I would watch an old clip of the NWA or Smoky Mountain or something, and I'm not like laughing at something Jim Cornette said.
Although
he's a little off the rocker today sometimes, I think.
Yes. I don't like the today's version, but no, he was. And I mean, the dude was a heat magnet because, that's why he carried a loaded racket, because he had to protect himself people. That's how hated he was.
Yeah. Oh, crazy. Well, that was a good manager battle royal. Last minute battle royal I got thrown in there. But all right, we move on. And now we are in a triple threat tag team match.
Oh, Lord.
And this one, I think we have two triple threat tag team matches. The first one is the Road Warriors, Wild Samoans, and the Rock and Roll Express.
So I'll steal like a page from your book and at least say who I think gets eliminated first, if that's a thing. It's not a death match, but for the sake of simplicity, take the Wild Samoans out of this. Oh. Impactful, great. But to me, the Rock and Roll Express and the Road Warriors, for different reasons, are to me like just, I mean, two of the all timers. And the Road Warriors were just, I mean, for a while there, they just had this aura of unstoppability that no other team had in that era, and maybe even now, like to this day. Like, and I mean, just international sensations, the entrance, everything. I mean, those guys just, I mean, it felt like they could never lose. They did lose sometimes, but man. In just the presentation coming out to like Iron Man, and then later not because they didn't have the rights to it. But they just larger than life figures. And the Rock and Roll Express, I mean, some of the greatest wrestling matches of all time they were part of with the Midnights and all these other teams. And again, like to this day, still wrestling. And, you know, Ricky Morton, like many people say, he could have been like one of the all time great solo baby faces. That's how good he could evoke. You know, they just had the formula down. They just win the crowd. So it's like, to me, those, I don't know, they're both so iconic. I'm going to pick the Rock and Roll Express because the Road Warriors were rude to my family at a restaurant. I get the last laugh.
You do. So you know what's fascinating? I think you're completely wrong.
Oh my goodness.
Like, the fact that I think the Wild Samoans.
Yeah.
I think the Wild Samoans are the greatest of all time. And here's why. Some of the greatest of all time are because of the Wild Samoans. And it's hard to deny. It is very hard to deny that even at its time, they weren't one of the greatest tag teams of all time. They were, you know, multi-time WWF champions. Mm. They were amazing. They were like one of the first kind of like character tag teams. But often Sika, I mean, Steve.
Yeah.
How many goats were, yes, were because of them? The Road Warriors, you're right, at its time, but they could wrestle for shit. You know they can.
That's true.
And that I'm not telling you yeah, Hoffa and Sika were great shakes, but they, you know, I mean, honestly, but they wrestled better than the Road Warriors. The Road Warriors couldn't wrestle. They were gimmicky as all get out.
That's true.
And then you look at the Rock and Roll Express, and while they and the Midnight Express could, if you threw them in there, I think if I had thrown the Midnight Express in there, that would have made it really hard for you, because
that would have been extremely hard. Yeah,
I know how much you like the Midnight Express, but here's the thing though. Regionally speaking, the Rock and Roll Express, the Midnight Express were great regional tag teams, but they weren't national tag teams.
Oh,
yeah, Afa Sika from Hawaii, internationally, you name it. And at the end of the day, they, outside of the ring, have produced some of the greatest wrestlers of all time that truly will be GOATs. So for me, it's a landslide.
Wow.
The Wild Samoans take this match.
Well, you know, last thing I'll say about the Road Warriors, out of these three teams, who hooked up with the most ladies?
Okay. Well, it sure wasn't the Wild Samoans.
Yeah, definitely not.
All right. Well, I feel like it's been a bit of a disadvantage for you not to hear some arguments. So I'm going to go first on this one. So,
okay.
All right. We're into the home stretch here. This one is, stable versus stable versus stable. The Horsemen, Von Erichs, and the Freebirds.
Wow.
All right. So I think this one for me, the Von Erichs speak for themselves, right? But I do think of the three, they're the one that gets eliminated first. Then it comes down to the Horsemen and the Freebirds. And this
I agree with that.
This was really hard because I tell you, like, when it came to the Horsemen, right, at the peak of their time, there was no greater faction. Right. However, I also am extremely partial to, as you know, World Class Championship Wrestling. In fact, I believe I sent you a screenshot as I was watching an episode on Peacock from the 1980s. And when I think about heels of heels that could work, the Freebirds were phenomenal. The only thing that I think, in some ways, if you want to split hairs, that differ is the Horsemen never could figure out all the people they wanted in there, and it changed so often.
That's true.
The Freebirds never changed, really. Its core was always intact.
Yeah.
And they were the first ones to introduce music into the wrestling scene.
Exactly. Yes.
And so, like entrance music and music videos and promos like that. So, and then the last thing I'll say is, for all that, you know, all of the different Horsemen, it is hard to dismiss the impact that Michael Hayes has had on the wrestling industry today. Now, granted, you know, like the Horsemen at its time, Arn, Tully, you know, Ric Flair, Ole Anderson, I mean, you name it, there's a lot of iterations. And there are some great goats in there. But if I just look by the faction, to me, the Freebirds take the cake. And I think that's controversial for a lot of people because of how beloved the Horsemen are.
I'm going to tell you, I agree 100%. I think the Freebirds. And I think for a lot, basically the same reasons. One, the innovation of the Freebirds. And the Von Erichs were iconically loved, the family. They would have never been as good as they were without these despicable heels that just, and like you said, they could go. These are all time great matches because I mean, like, they were great. All three of them. And then I would say four. Not everybody counts Jimmy Jam Garvin, but the Freebirds, the Freebirds do.
Yep.
Like Michael Hayes considers him a horse, a Freebird, and he went in the Hall of Fame with him, and he was great. So I think, yeah, they're four for four. Whereas the Horsemen, their nucleus was better than most, but it went on way too long. And even in the Nitro era, it was not. I mean, I'm sorry, Dean Malenko, great, but not. I mean, it's just they kind of turned into more of a workman's group because Dean Malenko and Benoit were good wrestlers, not a lot of personality. And then you started getting corny with the Mongo McMichaels, and then even before that, freaking Paul Roma and stuff. I mean, they really had a lot of swing and misses for the back half of it. But the Freebirds just were great. And like you said, there's, Michael Hayes is still like a relevant figure in wrestling, and he never hasn't been. So, yeah, I think the Freebirds are, they've left their stamp even more so. And you're right. Cool. That is controversial because lots of people will pick the Horsemen.
Yeah. All right. Okay, here we go. I'm the match card has changed.
Of course.
We had a last minute substitution. We have, here we go. We're going to go Randy Savage and Sting.
Oh my Lord. You did this to me on purpose.
I did. Okay. So please. I'm okay.
I do have an answer, but I want to hear yours.
I think I know your answer. And I think, you know, this one to me. Okay. So again, now, if you consider the whole body of work, it is very hard to dismiss what Sting has done over his whole career. However, with that being said, if you also count it mainstream popularity and or marketability, which are goat factors, right? Mm-hmm. Who's not going to know, oh yeah, or
Slim Jim,
stepping into Slim Jim, oh yeah. Like that may live on for a long time. Mm-hmm. And for me, as great as Sting was in the ring, I think Savage definitely could go. So as I think about the whole body of work, and then I think from a wrestling standpoint, I think I think Randy Savage was a better wrestler. I think so. I mean, one could argue, high flyer, really did some things that were innovative in his time. I think from a promo personality standpoint, it's hard to deny that Savage was stronger than Sting in that. I think Sting may have, you know, more crowd appeal, but then again, Savage was a heat magnet and there was no denying what he could do. So, but for when I think about the difference between these two, as much as Sting, I think Sting will be forgotten before Randy Savage will be.
So these are two of my all-time favorites. Sting, in fact, might be, depending on the day you catch me, my all-time favorite wrestler. Just wrapped up his career this year and did it magnificently. Again, a guy that never embarrassed himself.
Mm-hmm.
Every era of Sting has been cool, and he's been effective, and he's learned to roll with the eras. Hard to top that. But if I'm being pragmatic, there is probably no single category that I could list that Macho Man isn't a little bit better in. Like, better wrestler, yes, I would say. Better promo, yes. More huge household name. I mean, it's almost like a 1-2 with him and Hogan. Some of the all, you know, again, Steamboat. It took two to tango in that one. Steamboat, we just talked about being one of the all-time greatest. Steamboat didn't have all-time greatest matches with other guys other than Flair. Yeah, I mean, Macho Man's feuds, like with Hogan, with Ric Flair, with put DDP on the map. Like, he just, in the eras, he did that. So, yeah, I think Macho Man has to get the nod. I would say that.
I'm shocked.
Fairly strongly, I would say Macho Man's
the one. I'm shocked.
I'd be answering with my heart too much, but even that's not that much because Macho Man's right up there with me.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Now, if I had thrown these next two guys in there, Mr. Perfect and Ted DiBiase.
Oh, yeah.
Then you would have been really in trouble, yes. Right?
Like yes.
Because, you know, that's another three-way that I had written down, which was triple threat. Tito Santana, Mr. Perfect, and Ted DiBiase. And,
yeah,
I mean, that one's a banger in and of itself. And here's the reason, because, and it doesn't seem obvious, but all three of these guys, well before mainstream WWF, had amazing careers.
For sure.
Like, it was hard to deny Tito Santana, like, in the early NWA days. Like, if you do any research on him, boy, he was off the charts. And then the original, you know, Mr. Perfect, who was Kurt Hennig, yeah. You know, back in the AWA days, I mean, his AWA heavyweight championship run was, he beat Nick Bockwinkel, and they had, and I vividly remember on New Year's Eve, I watched it in my house on ESPN. It was a bloody, bloody 60-minute draw between him and Nick Bockwinkel, off the chart match. Was phenomenal. And then, you know, here's the thing, you know, this is where Ted DiBiase, right? I mean, as much as we know about how great the Million Dollar Man was in Mid-South, he was even worse. He was a dastardly heel and really was. And then he was also one of the, before that in Mid-South, was a beloved figure. So, I mean, I call this match a draw.
Wow. A draw. That's
a
first ever.
A time limit goat draw.
Yeah, that's tough. You said so much there that I don't want to go on and on and on, but it's like, it's really, this one's hard for me too, because Mr. Perfect is like one of my all time favorites too. So, and I just think his cool factor and like, I mean, yeah. To me, like, but I wouldn't pick Tito, but
yeah, but here's the thing,
out of the three,
if you think about career, in-ring performance, ability to incite a crowd, like Arriba, remember?
Yes,
that? I mean, like,
I do.
Who, you, I mean, that guy. Now, here's the thing. He would get a knock on gimmick and promo.
Yeah, sure. He wasn't outstanding promo by any means. He was just okay.
And so, like, Mr. Perfect, Ted DiBiase, definitely match him in terms of in-ring. And I would say from a career standpoint, they all had many, many championships. So, you know, like, I took the easy way out with a draw, but yeah. I definitely think at the end of the day, though, if I were pushed, my vote would be with Ted DiBiase for this single reason, is because at the end of the day, of all the things, career long, you know, his whole career, his gimmick, in-ring, promo, the last thing would be crowds. Ted DiBiase was a main eventer.
Yeah.
Far more from Mid-South. With him and JYD were packing the Superdome. Superdome. Yes, Kurt Hennig was doing stuff in Minneapolis, but he never really was a main eventer as much as Ted DiBiase was.
That's fair.
Well, we've come to the main event.
Oh boy.
It's a fatal four-way.
This involved Mojo Rawley.
Mojo Rawley, yeah, you got it. Dusty Rhodes.
Oh, my God.
Andre the Giant. Ric Flair. And Hulk Hogan.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, pre-WrestleMania era.
Pre-WrestleMania era?
I mean, we've got to kind of identify it as...
I mean, that takes one out then.
Yes. To me, it does, but...
I think...
The WrestleMania era is, I don't think we can go with this one past, like, even if we include up to WrestleMania 3, which then is fairly fair game because there were Starcades and all kinds of other stuff.
Sure.
What do you think?
No, wait, hold on. I got so fixated. It was this Dusty, Flair, Hogan.
Dusty, Flair.
Oh, and Andre. Andre. Yeah.
Okay, so let's throw the case for any of them. All right. So first one, I'll throw this out. I'll go with I'll throw a case out for Dusty Rhodes. Okay. So unbelievable talker, unbelievable personality, unbelievable ability to draw. Was to this day is still seen as a father figure for many. In ring, but national figure. I mean, he, you know, it's hard to deny from Florida up to the Crockett's, then up to the WWF and then to the NXT afterwards, you know, but if we just go up to around let's try to just ignore to some degree for these four things past WrestleMania 3 up to WrestleMania 3, you know, Dusty was a household name. He was drawing, but I don't think he was drawing to the extent that the other three were.
I think that's fair. I agree with that.
All right.
Yeah. He doesn't win this one for me in the pre-era.
In the pre-era.
Yeah.
If you take out everything past WrestleMania 3, and the reason we include WrestleMania 3 only for this reason is because then it's a fairly fair game between Hogan and Andre. And you got to count Flair in there because Flair had some banger starcades up to that point. Banger starcades. So you've got Hogan, right?
Yep.
Who was an unbelievably charismatic figure in WrestleMania 3. However, I would say up to WrestleMania, not as popular.
I agree. Yeah, his AWA run was foundational, but it wasn't on par with the other names we've talked about.
And his original WWF run was overshadowed by Andre.
Yes.
So people are going to think we're crazy, but now you've got it. In my mind, it's down to Andre and Flair.
With the era we're talking about.
With the era all time, we're speaking about.
Changing their business and all that. I mean, Hogan's hard to argue with the whole body of work. Plus the NWO, all that.
Yes.
But I think in the era we're talking about, this feels right.
Right. And so, and now I know we've talked out of both sides of our mouth because we have talked about others saying, oh, their longevity across. But
sure.
For the sake of
That's true. Just, I did a lot of that. That's true.
Yeah. But for the sake of just this match, if it becomes a harder question, because at the end of the day, if you truly have to look at WrestleMania 3 as the breaking point for these four guys, and I think up to WrestleMania 3, between Flair and Andre, it's hard to deny their abilities and what they did in the pre-WrestleMania days. I don't necessarily think after WrestleMania 3, I think it's a no-brainer. I think Hogan, I think Hogan trumps them.
I agree.
And as great, and this is hard for me to say, because I love the character Ric Flair. I do not, and I want to make sure this is clear, do not agree with his antics outside, but his character, top-notch. But when it comes to a global phenomenon, I think up to WrestleMania 3, it would be hard to argue that Andre wouldn't have been the GOAT.
I guess, sure. And I don't think people, even me, you know, me at my age and what I watched growing up, fully appreciate the global impact because a lot of us remember him from WrestleMania, which was iconic, but a shell of what he was.
A shell.
When he was just beating everybody and just winning these battle royals and going around the world and drawing every single place he went.
Flair was a traveling champion, give him that. But without, and this is the crazy part, I think, without a title, without a championship, of which Andre never had. I mean, he would go from territory to territory to territory and would sell out places just by wrestling battle royals and all kinds of other, you know, feature matches with their top heels and their top baby faces. And, you know, he did it across the globe, like across the globe.
Yes.
And
big deal everywhere.
And, you know, the other thing too is, you know, then you just think about his earlier days. He was a much better wrestler. In fact, as I just alluded to, I watched an old world class from 1982. And what's funny is if you actually go into Peacock and watch some of the territory stuff, he was in Mid-South in the month of January. And then in February was in Texas. And he's on like four shows. And then I think he went somewhere else after that. But, you know, he was crazy better of a wrestler. Like you just, you know, if you don't think about the one that almost felt like he was really dilapidated near the end of his career, he was a much better worker, and just things he could do with his body was, you know, pretty amazing. So
yeah, I agree.
Controversial, maybe.
That's, I think, why it's, we controversial did this. If you just look at it as most people would on the mainstream American scene that you saw him in, that we grew up in. But when you paint the whole picture, it's really hard to argue that. And I bet I bet Ric Flair would agree with that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what'd you think? This was kind of,
I think,
fun.
That's pretty great. And I think kudos to you, because it wasn't like a tournament. It wasn't like the NCAA where you got the bunnies. You know, it's like you got like the
some layup
shitty teams. No, it wasn't like Mojo Rawley versus Ric Flair to start things off.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're making decisions between guys like Harley Race and Bruno Sammartino, they're, like I said, some of those, like that one, there's no wrong answer to that question.
No.
It's just all perspective. And that's cool. Is. That's the testament to wrestling and what's so great about it.
Well, this was a lot of fun, my friend, and I hope that those that are listening appreciated the throwback to old school, and you know, go back in Peacock and YouTube and watch some of these guys in the pre, I would say, wait, but what was WrestleMania 3, 1984
or something like that, maybe
85. Watching some of these things from the early 80s, I think you would be really fascinated with just the character and the wrestlers that they were, you know, and there were a lot of guys that we, and women that we did not cover tonight. But maybe we'll do that on another episode.
I think, you know, this is a format that's definitely repeatable in different eras and different. Yep. I mean, that's fun. I like it.
Cool.
Good job, my friend.
You too, my friend. Have a great rest of your night. Thanks, everybody.
Woo.
Oh, wait.
Wait.
Wait, isn't there, wait. Did we forget about a wrestler?
Well, it's funny you should bring that up, because
and we can't say goodbye yet. We must have missed somebody.
Well, you know, it's a little bit of a challenge, because you did limit the era, and that kind of makes it a little bit harder for this to happen. But I do think that there is a wrestler that goes by some simple initials that would definitely be hard to miss on this one. And
it was a miscarriage of justice, wasn't it? That we included.
But however, I'm glad you brought this up, because I think we have to transcend the eras, because to be on the list like this, there's certain criteria you have to meet regardless of the era.
Regardless of the era. You're
three things. And it's, one, you got to stay humble.
Yeah.
Two, you have to stay hungry. And three, you have to stay hard.
That's right. Triple H.
And that's where it all ends.
Right there. Woo!